Another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artists by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking. On with the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Season 2 of We Dig Music. I am Ian, and with me are my comrades and co-hosts, Colin.
Hello.
And Tracy.
Hello.
Every week we will talk about... No.
Every fortnight.
Every fortnight.
Close.
We will talk about two bands. A support band and a headline band. They will all begin with the same letter. Both, even. Begin with the same letter of the alphabet.
In each episode.
In each episode.
Otherwise it'd be a really long series of A's.
This is the A series. The A series.
The B series, this would be.
But right now, we're on the letter A.
We are. So.
Which is American Music Club and Arcade Fire.
It is indeed.
Tracy, tell us about American Music Club.
Okay.
On the front lawn, watch the fireflies as the sun goes down. They don't live too long, just a flash and then they're gone. We'll laugh at them and watch the sun go down.
American Music Club were an American alternative rock group formed in California in 1983. They had 9 studio albums between 85 and 2008. Their 1985 debut, The Restless Stranger, is credited with launching the genre known as slowcore. I utterly hate that name. And I wouldn't even say it describes them either.
There's no core in what they do.
It doesn't.
They're not a neat fit for any one genre, to be honest. They're a bit folk, a bit country.
Honestly, when you said alternative, I was like, I'm not even going to argue with that one. Wikipedia has nailed it this time.
Yeah, I would say maybe alt country. But then they've moved around.
But they're a
around.
Little folky as well. I mean, they're generally downbeat and maudlin. All my favourite things.
There's some upbeat bits in there, definitely.
Some.
Some of the, like, Gary's song and stuff like that's fairly upbeat. Not lyrically.
Lyrically it isn't.
Not lyrically, but the tune
is about
upbeat.
Watching his friend drink himself to death.
Yes, but it's still in a quite a cheerful way.
Well, it's a classic country waltz.
Yes.
Okay, then.
So... they had multiple lineup changes over the years, but the lineup I consider to be the classic is Mark Eitzel on vocals and guitar, Voody on guitar, Dan Pearson on bass, Tim Mooney on drums, and sometime member Bruce Caffan on pedal steel.
Yeah.
In 1991, they recorded the widely acclaimed Everclear, which attracted major label attention.
An album so good, a band named themselves.
Well, Everclear really need to release an album called American Music Club.
They do.
Yes, they
in
do.
The same way that Dog Eat Dog released an EP called Warrant after Warrant released an album called Dog Eat Dog.
Yep.
And Nick Lowe released an EP called Bowie.
Ah, nice.
And Bowie had an album called Lowe.
Yeah, that was first. That's why Nick Lowe released Bowie.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
And why Structures would. Joke. Possibly have released an EP called Fuck Off, You Canadians.
So, after that 91 album...
Not all of Canada, just Canadian structures.
We'll talk about some we like later.
Also, French structures, who are a new thing. You can fuck off also. We had it first. Go away.
Les structures.
Racist. Wait, no, xenophobe.
Xenophobe, yeah.
Sorry.
It's all right with the French. You're allowed... No, maybe not. Sorry, Tracy, continue.
In 1991, after they released...
Just a query, right?
Everclear.
The album, or the lineup that you consider to be the best lineup, is that the genuinely, like...
Is it the classic lineup?
Is that what everyone considers, or is it just the Tracy classic?
No, it was the most stable lineup.
Okay, that's cool.
Well, I say stable. I mean, I say Tim Mooney was on drums, but for a lot of it, actually, he wasn't there, and they had people filling in because he was in rehab. So
that does seem to fit with a lot of their lyrics.
But
there's a lot of alcoholism in the lyrics, isn't there?
Oh, he's got to do something to fill the time. Like, I don't know, if I was in a band that sounded that middle of the road, I think in the rest of the time I'd probably be doing
middle
something.
Middle of the road.
Oh, there's
going to be a fight. In 1991, Rolling Stone put them in the top five albums of the year.
Right.
And
what else was in the top?
And named Eitzel Songwriter of the Year.
But what else was in the top five?
Top five that year for yes. Rolling Stone was Nirvana's Nevermind.
Right.
Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
So it was in the top 6.
That was counted as 1.
Yeah, so it was in the it was the
top
six best album of the year.
U2's Actung Baby. And what was the other one? She says, looking through her notes.
91?
Yeah.
Loveless?
No.
Now, you know that these lists always have like an oddball one thrown in to be like, look at us, we know about all kinds of music. That's what this is.
Well, I like it.
I don't see, this is the thing, right? I don't dislike it. I'm just not really invested. I put it on this morning, and I was like, no, this is pretty cool. I could have got into
this. Do you know which one you put
on? It was REM's Out of Time, by the way.
Yeah, that's a better
one. It's the first two tracks that were on the playlist. They were both from Everclear, so...
Okay, oh, it's Everclear you were talking
about.
Yeah,
like, I like it. I did, I liked it. Yeah. I just not... Not enough.
Yeah.
But it was the mad thing about them getting the Rolling Stone one of the top five albums of the year, because the other ones it was in there with were all multi-platinum albums.
That is a fair point. They were massive,
and
still now massive albums.
Yeah, and Everclear had sold at that point about 10,000.
Yeah.
A ridiculously low amount. And that's been something that's repeated over and over for them throughout their career.
So critically acclaimed, but not backed up by
critically
the
acclaimed
sales.
Yeah. Darlings of the UK music press, especially Melody Maker, from 91 onwards.
Uncut is a magazine that championed quite a lot of that.
And it just never, ever converted into sales.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, they've rarely made a royalty check off any of their albums.
Right, so they're running at a loss a lot of the time, kind of thing.
By the time they were, I mean, they did sign to Virgin, and by the time they got to their Mercury album, and by the time
they signed to Mercury and released an album called Virgin.
By the time they got dropped,
totes.
They were in debt to them to the tune of about $1.5 million.
That's fairly significant.
Yeah. It's pretty serious.
I had not. They're a band that I've known the name of for years. I mean, I've been friends with you for, what, 15 years now? Something like that?
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, had never actually listened. And then I realised that I've got a Rough Trade Shop's country compilation, which has got Gary's song on it. So I knew that song.
Right.
I just, because I always put that album on and don't look at the track listing... Most of the bands on there, I couldn't tell you who they are.
And it's weird because, I mean, I love Gary's song, but it's not terribly representative.
It's not. It's their most country-ish
song.
It's
not representative even of the album it's from, let alone the rest of their catalogue.
Yeah.
It's always weird when record companies are like, yeah, that's the single. Like, but dude, it sounds nothing like the rest of it.
Well,
People will be really surprised when they buy the album.
Well, make sure your next album is 12 of that one, is what the record company's probably going to come back with then.
Yeah.
I mean, the record label did it to them before as well. There was a song called Bad Liquor, which is perceived by most American Music Club fans to be the worst of their songs on basically any of their albums.
Which album is that one on?
It's on California. But because it was just basically a straight-up noisy rock song, it was one they recorded first, and at the point they wanted something to put out to try and attract radio play. That's the one they said, oh, well, you can have that one.
Ah.
And it was nothing like the rest of the album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My sort of going into it before I'd realised that I already knew Gary's song, when I was listening to the playlist, my first impression of it was, this sounds like Red House Painters, but with a pedal steel guitar. So that is a good thing.
Well, American Music Club were...
got them signed.
Them signed.
He passed the demo to Ivo Watts-Russell from 4AD for Mark Coslett, didn't he? So, and they're both San Francisco based, aren't they?
Yeah, and they were never actually friends. Everyone thought that they ought to be.
Mark Kozelek is a grumpy motherfucker, and I get the impression that Mark Eitzel is as well, so I can see why they wouldn't get on.
I interviewed American Music Club in 92 after a gig in Birmingham for a friend's fanzine, and I asked him about Red House Painters, and I said, would they ever tour together?
Yeah.
And he said, no, it'd be bullshit.
Okay, did he elucidate on that point?
Monsters of Slowcore.
Well, yeah. I mean, they had played some dates together, I believe. But he actually said he did like his stuff. And he said, at that point in 92, he said it summed up the very best of teen angst at the time. and he said by the time he got to his age, that Mark Kozelek would be a great songwriter.
He is a good few years older, isn't he? Is he about 8 or 9 years older than him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the first Red House Painters album was early 90s and he was going from early 80s.
It's a weirdly patronising compliment, isn't it?
It is. Like,
when you're older, you're going to be great. I'm like, do I suck now then? Is that what you're fucking saying?
The weird thing is, though, with Mark Kozelek, I actually think his songwriting was better when he was young. Now, it's just this weird stream of consciousness about some boxing match he watched last night. His songwriting now is...
Maybe he's just doing a thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's doing a thing.
To be fair, Mark Kozelek, I'm sure we'll get into later on another time, because I know Red House Painters are definitely on the list.
Yeah.
But I agree, I prefer the earlier Red House Painters stuff to Sun Kil Moon and things like that.
But I didn't get into American Music Club, actually, until California came out. A friend of mine played Firefly, the opening track to that, to me. And I was just addicted from the beginning.
Was that like the third album, California?
Yes. Yeah. And so she put California and the album before it, Engine, onto a C90 for me, and I played that tape to death.
Which were the two records that aren't on Spotify that you sent us over, because you say they're the most definitive of their sound.
Totally. Engine and California are, I think, well, to me, they're the ones that most sum them up.
Why are they not on Spotify?
Probably record company.
It's a record company thing with Grifter, who they put their first three albums out.
Did Grifter even still exist? Because it's probably some...
No, not at all. Now, the problem with
Grifter... acquisition company that owned rights.
The problem with Grifter is Tom Mallon started up Grifter. He was involved in the sort of late hardcore scene in California at that time. He'd done work with Circle Jerks and Replacements, I think. And he'd heard American Music Club, absolutely fell in love with them, and became so involved with them that he was both their manager, their record label, and he became a full-time member of the band for two albums, and he produced the album as well.
So when they fall out, there's going to be a big fallout involved.
And then he stopped managing them and passed the role over without their consent to his wife, Leslie.
Right. Yeah, that's not going to necessarily...
Huge tensions between the band and Grifter and Leslie Mallon. And I believe there are problems getting the rights even now. Tom Mallon died in 2012, but I still don't think they've got the rights to release any of those recordings. Okay. So hence, they're not on Spotify.
Yeah.
So no, Ian, you didn't get to listen to what I actually consider to be...
No. Oh, well.
you wouldn't have liked them anymore. But do you know what? I didn't own a copy of the first album until about...
So it was Restless Stranger.
The Restless Stranger. Until about a year ago. I'd heard it before then, but I didn't own a copy. And I got it from a shop in Ludlow called Mod Lang, that's run by someone who used to have a shop in LA and knew Leslie Mallon. So he got these copies personally from her.
Well, see, I decided to give Restless Stranger a listen yesterday because I was looking on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And Wikipedia says that it's cited as an early influence on post-rock.
Oh.
Really?
No.
No.
Don't get it at all. I mean, I listened to the album.
It's so-called slowcore, but no, not
No, it definitely says post-rock on... which I did not see any of that.
A lot of people get... They just get post-rock wrong. They're like, oh, yeah, this is an influence. Like, what? Because the dude got a fucking delay pedal.
But no. It hasn't even got any... It's basically slow alt country.
With some distortion.
Yeah. Well, alt country tends to have
a
bit of distortion, doesn't it?
No, I wouldn't make a link to post-rock at all.
No, but slowcore, I always used to, years ago, I would lump in bands like Low with post-rock, because I used to listen to them at the same sort of time as listening to Mogwai and Godspeed. And Low were definitely... I mean, Low coined the term slowcore.
I'm really, really bummed out with this whole slowcore genre.
Well,
as a name,
and sadcore.
Well, I think the name was a joke. I think when Low came up with it, but it does kind of describe their sound a little bit.
Yeah, but I'd want to, if I went to look for slowcore, I'd want to listen to like the slower bits of Crowbar's catalogue and Conan
you'd
and stuff like
more
that. Like
the hardcore side.
The core definitely has a "this is fucking heavy" implication.
But a lot of them, even the sort of old country side of bands, are coming from. Originally from hardcore bands,
yeah,
and that kind of thing. You know, when you've got bands like Green on Red, and X, and people like that, they're kind of a crossover between the two.
There was a review that refers to Green on Red actually, after they'd released Engine, I think. Oh God, you said postcore actually. There was a. Postcore.
What the fuck is postcore?
Eitzel actually described the first album as a band, sounds like a band failing miserably to be Joy Division.
I didn't see any Joy Division influences in it at all.
Well, then, if they were failing miserably, then
yeah,
I get it.
Failing miserably.
Definitely.
But anyway, Engine, there was a review that said. That Engine was by no means a bad record. However, it's interchangeable with so many other American discs of recent years. Not that I mind another country-tinged guitar record to drink to, but you don't want to hear some guy whining existential pathos when you're sipping your Jim Beam. Buy a Green on Red record instead. That's what they said about Engine. I mean, he's so wrong.
See, now, the main comparison that I thought of, you're absolutely going to hate, Tracy, but for me, is a good thing. I was listening to At My Mercy, which is that's on Engine, isn't it?
Yes.
And Outside This Bar as well.
Yeah.
Bit Springsteen-y, but the main band, particularly that At My Mercy reminded me of, is it could have been on Recovering the Satellites by Counting Crows. I knew you were going to make a face like that.
Oh, that's
I wish
a
this
face.
Was a video podcast so you guys could see that face. I'm sure some of the listeners are probably making similar faces. But I like Counting Crows, so
Bruce
you can fuck off.
Bruce Caffan, after he left American Music Club, went on to... because he was a producer as well. He went on to work with Counting Crows, actually.
Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me. The Counting Crows are... They were a lot more successful and mainstream, but they're coming from a similar sort of background.
Yeah, sure.
And they're playing... country-tinged alternative rock tunes.
Like, vocally, I thought he sound, kind of reminded me of the dude from The National, or one of the dudes from The National, because many of them sing, don't they? But
yeah, but the main guy whose name I've completely blanked on at the moment.
I honestly don't know the names of any... I've got High Violet, and I love it.
Yeah.
It's great. And it kind of just... That is what saved it for me. I was like, oh...
Okay.
Right, kind of reminds me of that. Yeah, I can listen to this more now.
I mean, it's weird because so many artists over the years have cited American Music Club as an influence. They're one of the most influential bands that no one's ever heard of, that never had any widespread commercial success.
But then a lot of really influential bands, you know, Velvet Underground at the time had no success.
Well, that's true.
Whatsoever,
yeah. That's
they?
True.
Well, like even Refused at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the problem with American Music Club is Eitzel had some kind of self-destruct mode.
I was just about to say that. Can I just read a quote from a review that I found online?
Go on.
Eitzel displays an astonishing lack of self-respect towards his own body of work in a live setting.
I recognise those words.
Yes, you wrote it.
They're mine.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was Googling live reviews and that came up, possibly because it was in my history because I'd linked it on our... website. By the way, WeDigPodcast.com.
Yes, check
our,
that out.
Our new website.
It's bright, shiny, new.
So, but shall we go back to the self-destructiveness of Mark Eitzel?
I mean, Mark Eitzel is so self-deprecating. if you try and give him a compliment, you know, if you're at a gig and people shout out, "Mark, we love you," or shout out for a request, you normally get a prompt, "Fuck you."
How many times has he said "fuck you" to you, Tracy?
You've done it on purpose, haven't you?
I
heard that this would happen. I'm going to try it.
I didn't used to heckle him live because it was terrifying. But he went that interview that I did with them. He asked me to leave.
Wow.
Except I didn't realise he'd asked me to leave because
you weren't paying attention.
Well, I'll get to it in a sec. And I only heard that he'd asked me to leave when I listened back to the tape the next day to transcribe it. And I'm like, oh,
shit. So you just stayed there?
Yeah.
How much longer did you carry on after he'd gone, "No, but go away, please go away"?
Because what he actually said, he said, "See that open door over there? I suggest you leave."
Wow.
And I'd missed what he said because I was really embarrassed because of what had just caused him to say that. So we were in the middle of this interview and he is rambling on some self-deprecating bullshit metaphor about Arnold Palmer, the golfer.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm going to read you what he was saying at the point where I drifted off.
Excellent.
It was something about enjoyment and not equaling truth. And he said, "Oh, well, that's the lie. Enjoyment is of the moment, and moments pass really quickly. The truth is horrid and lasts a lot longer. As soon as I get on stage, I keep thinking I had these incredible thoughts. I keep feeling exactly what people were thinking, and they were listening to us. At least I thought I was. And then I thought, Mark, you're just like Arnold Palmer. You're a really dumb golfer, and all you know how to do is play golf, and it's a really pitiful thing. It's not like an important thing. Pop music is not important. Enjoyment is not important." And so he was rambling away.
And you went, "Jesus Christ, shut the fuck up."
And no. What happened is there was a disco after the gig in the downstairs room or the upstairs room. We were at Eddie's Number 8.
Ah, yeah.
And I heard the intro to Huggy Bear's Her Jazz.
Okay.
And so while he was rambling on, I heard the intro and I went, "Oh my God, that's Huggy Bear."
So you upset him in the middle of his self-pitying bullshit.
Yeah, he kind of freaked.
To be fair, it really does sound like he deserved it.
But no, Tracy deserved it. I think they both deserved it.
I think everybody involved deserved it.
Kind of broke my heart that night, actually. But
were you ever able to... Well, obviously you were able to listen, but for a while afterwards, were you a bit put off listening to it?
Yeah, loads. Yeah. Loads.
Yeah, that's the right attitude.
But
when someone in a band is a dick to you, stop listening to them.
And every time I see them live,
they can sense it.
But every time I see him live, he breaks my heart a little bit more because of the way he is about his music. I think he's a genius. He's an amazing songwriter. He's got a vocal delivery that can reduce me to tears. And yet, he's just like, "Oh, this is shit. This is
But if he actually genuinely thought it was shit, he wouldn't do it, would he?
Yeah, he obviously, at some level,
it sounds like it's
believes in his
bit
work.
Of a shtick, really.
Yeah,
to be honest.
I mean, he does things like, someone I was talking to on Twitter said he saw him at a gig in London and he played half the gig with a My Little Pony sticking out his flies because he thought it was funny.
Okay.
Right.
Perhaps he's a brownie.
It sounds a bit fucking try-hard to me, though.
Yeah.
To be honest.
But his songs are so beautiful.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. I mean, the opening track on the playlist, Fearless, that you put on for us, which is first track on San Francisco, there's this descending bass line chord sequence in it. It's unexpected, because you don't... You expect a chorus to go up, usually.
Yeah, yeah.
And it descends.
And it is fucking beautiful.
I could drown in that song. It is.
Please don't.
So
we need you for a load more
gorgeous.
Episodes.
Like that sofa is not wiped clean.
it's
control
got
yourself.
It's got this part in Fearless. I'm actually in the middle of writing a piece for another website. I promised it a year ago, and Merrick, sorry, I still haven't finished it. I will promise.
But it
promise.
Will be finished by the time the episode comes out, won't it, Tracy?
It may well do. please do go...
Merrick Ongan and Naga for you.
Please go and check out toppermost.com. It's a really brilliant site drawing together loads of fan-written pieces about their favourite bands. It's got such a wide range of artists on there. It really is worth checking out. But so I'm in the middle of writing this piece, and on Fearless, I actually wrote the section in the middle eight where he says... Or will I fall into...
Yes, that line.
Will I fall into a cool, cool river? Or will I fall into a frozen lake? And then there's this guitar note that descends, and you feel like you're falling and you're submerged underwater for the rest... For the guitar...
Yeah.
For the pedal steel break that
totally
follows.
Totally agree. It's fucking beautiful.
And then as he comes into the final verse and sings Saved Again...
Yeah.
You've suddenly broken through the surface of the water again.
Yeah, I can dig that.
And if I said any of this to Mark Eitzel, he'd probably just say, fuck you.
Should we send him a copy of the podcast just to annoy him?
Yep. No. I think he'll especially like the bit where I'm like, sounds like a bit of a shtick, it's bullshit.
I mean, but this is a thing that all his fans acknowledge, that he's widely... accepted to be a songwriting master.
Yeah.
And yet...
Yeah, his live shows are... I'm guessing as you still go that there are moments of genius in between the frustration.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's done... He's actually had more solo albums than he had with American Music Club. I largely ignored his solo career, I'm afraid, but... his last album, Hey Mr. Ferryman, was released last year.
And there was a track in our top songs of the year, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. La Llorona.
Yeah.
But I hate it.
I didn't mind it.
Ah, see, there we go.
But I picked the most guitar-based track.
That was
track.
The one that Tracy cheated by choosing her favourite track.
Yeah.
Just the one that was pandering to what we would like.
Because my favourite track on that is actually called An Answer, which is just the most gorgeous ballad.
I think it seems like I just basically nothing Mark Eitzel. Like, I'm not...
It's not in your sort of wheelhouse, so...
I've got a really fucking big wheelhouse, man.
Yeah,
I listen to all kinds of shit.
It just
didn't... I realised earlier...
But there's gaps in it.
I say
as
earlier...
There is with everyone.
But, like, months ago, that what happens with me is if I find a band that sounds like something and I really like them, unless a band that has presented to me that sounds like that is better than that, I couldn't give a fuck.
Because you've already got the other band.
Yeah,
exactly. Like Guitar Wolf, right? If you're going to tell me you're a noisy rock and roll band and you're not as noisy as Guitar Wolf, get the fuck out. I don't care. Right? The only band that's even come close is Jim Jones Review, because they are horrifically noisy as well.
They are.
that's the most extreme example, but that's what I mean.
Whereas on the other hand, I, who had not really listened to American Music Club, I'd say I'm a convert. I really have enjoyed it.
Oh, cool.
And I will listen to more. I was listening through a few of his solo albums last night.
Yeah.
The Songs of Love Live, which is a solo him and an acoustic guitar.
Well, what's strange is that was done when American Music Club was still very much a thing.
Yeah.
And there was so much record... company tension over in California that the UK label suggested, Demon in the UK suggested he come over, record a live show, and they release it.
Yeah,
it's just a way of keeping
really
their profile.
It's a cheap way
up
of making
UK.
A record,
mm.
And it's a really good record. Some of the versions on that, I think the version of Last Harbour on there is, I think, better than the album version.
A lot of people say that. I prefer the album versions of all of those, but that live album is beautiful. It really is.
And another one that I listened to that I wasn't quite as keen on. He's got an album called Candy Ass, which initially I was really disappointed that it wasn't a note for note cover of Orgy, the Californian nu metal synth pop band. album from the late 90s. It isn't, although there is some weird synthy stuff on there. But the opening track on that, which was about his pet rat,
of course,
was very, very good. It wasn't Ben, It wasn't a cover of Ben by Michael Jackson. It was.
Yeah, I don't like a lot of his solo stuff. He did quite a few albums where it's just him and Pro Tools.
Well, yeah, the next two tracks were sort of weird, noodly synth electronic
type
things.
Yeah, really weird Pro Tools
which I
things.
Thought you would
putting
hate.
In, putting in keyboards instead of guitars. And,
yeah.
And that's just not the sound that I liked.
But he's, I suppose that's why he keeps the American Music Club name going. Because really, even though you've got Voodoo and the other guys that do recur in the band, it's a bit of a, he's the face of the band, and it's a bit like Mark E. Smith. It's
but
Mark
bizarrely,
Eitzel and your granny on bongos, isn't it?
Even though it's a Mark Eitzel vehicle, it's actually Voodoo who put the band together. He saw Eitzel singing solo, thought he was the greatest songwriter he'd ever seen, and decided he needed a band. So Voodoo put the band together.
That makes sense.
It was Voodoo's band. On going up to Eitzel and telling him that he thought it was the greatest thing he'd ever heard, Mark Eitzel predictably said, fuck you.
Excellent. Do we know why Voodoo's called Voodoo?
I did, and I've forgotten.
Is it like his name's Dave Voodooson?
It was some kind of in-joke. There's a wonderful, wonderful biography written by Sean Bodie called Wish the World Away about Mark Eitzel.
Sean Bodie about Voodoo.
About Mark Eitzel.
And also Mooney.
Music Club.
Don't forget that. Was
Mooney,
well.
But that was his actual name, so that's fine.
All of these facts and more are contained within that book, and it's an amazing, amazing book.
It's not contained within your head at this point.
No, nor within my notes.
Which is ridiculous. Ridiculous. Well,
I think we're probably about done with American.
Well, actually, no. Can I say one more thing? Because I wanted to pick up on something that Ian had said in a previous episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
That Peter Buck of REM has this habit of trying to save artists.
Yes.
Yes.
He tried with Mark Eitzel.
And failed.
Unfortunately, they recorded an album together called West. Around about the time, about 97, 98. And although it was well received, it sank without a trace.
Oh.
As
critically well received.
Yes, critically well received.
So the theme continues.
Yep.
Yeah, so
they're
a band who've just never got the recognition they deserve, sadly.
Well, they have from you, Tracy, and that's all that matters.
Yes, and you like them now.
And I like them
I'm glad.
I just don't mind them.
And I'm sure somebody else listening, they hopefully will be at least one person that will listen to this and not have heard them before and go, that's pretty cool, I'll go and check out one of their records.
Yeah, man, why not?
I recommend San Francisco, but that's not necessarily the one you recommend, is it?
I recommend High Violet by The National.
No, I mean, I do like that. I mean, it's awful for me to admit that, I mean, because they disbanded after San Francisco. And then they got back together.
They had a terrible time there.
They got back together 10 years later and they did two more albums. And even though I saw them on both of those tours and I've got those albums, I've rarely listened to them since. I didn't even revisit them in full for this podcast.
Fair enough.
So.
Cool. Right. Shall we talk about Arcade Fire then?
Yeah, sorry, I was just waving at a pigeon.
Amazing. Did it wave back?
No, it's a pigeon.
That is a really rude pigeon.
All pigeons are bastards.
All pigeons are rude, definitely. Let's talk about Arcade Fire.
Yes.
Okay then.
Are an alternative rock band, for want of a better genre name, formed in Montreal, Canada in 2001, or thereabouts, as it says on Wikipedia. It's a bit vague.
Who remembers these things?
Exactly.
At some point.
So, your main members are Wynn Butler and his wife, Regine Chassang. or Shisagni, or however the fuck you pronounce it. His brother, William Butler. The current lineup is Wynn Butler, Regine Shisang. William, I'm just going to call her Regine for the entire podcast, because I clearly can't say Shisang. William Butler, Richard Reed Parry, Tim Kingsbury, Jeremy Gara, Sarah Neufeld, and various other people.
There's more members than the Wu-Tang Clan.
Pretty much, and they play more instruments than there are members.
Yes.
Other than Wynn and Regine are the lead vocalists, everyone else pretty much swaps around instruments.
Apart from that dude that was just coming off and on stage just playing percussion.
I think he also played panpipes.
Did he?
Yeah, he played panpipes and everything now. Or may not have, because it's a sample. I don't know if he was playing that live when we saw them. It's a sample from the Coffee Cola song, which is an old sort of Afro beat pop kind of thing.
Alright.
But yeah, they were formed in Montreal in the early 2000s. They came to prominence with their album Funeral in 2004.
Yes.
And since then, they've changed their sound quite a lot over the years.
Significantly,
for the
albums. Yes.
I would say they are the closest thing that we have to Talking Heads.
I would agree with you, actually, yes.
I got into them when the first album came out. So they had an EP before that, which was fairly obscure at the time, but after Funeral came out, was re-released.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's good. It's great. It's got No Cars Go on it, which they later re-recorded on Neon Bible, which is one of their sort of defining songs.
Very much so.
Particularly live. They there's a common theme running through all of their music, even though they've changed styles, where they've got big sort of chorusy type crowd sing-along la 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 type melodies, which are, even when they were playing smaller venues, were fucking designed for stadiums.
There's huge amounts of like back to nature type lyrics as well, which is weird considering they actually went away from acoustic-y type instruments and more into
electronic throughout the years.
We want everything to go back to nature. No. That was my best keyboard.
That was a good noise. I like that.
Gotta put a little bit of a filter sweep on it.
I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
I think there's at least a flanger in Audacity.
That should do it then. That'll do.
Excellent. It'll be like when we did the Led Zeppelin episode.
Yes.
Smith's one. I was a massive, massive fan in the early days when Funeral first came out. It was when working in a record shop. And I can't remember where I first heard them. I think it might have just been reading about them in the NME, and then when the album came in, going, right, I'll give this a listen then. One of the main things that attracted me at the time is that I knew that they'd recorded it at Hotel Tutango.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the studio owned by Ephraim and Thierry. Have I pronounced that
Thierry.
Name? Thierry. Who are in Godspeed You Black Emperor and Silver Mount Zion. They own a studio in Montreal.
Yes.
And so many bands have recorded there sort of over the years, and every time it's somebody interesting.
I think I'd have first heard them on Six Music. Because around that time I had a job where I could just listen to the radio all day.
Yeah.
While I was working.
So that's probably going to be like Wake Up and stuff like that that you would have.
But I've got Funeral and I've got the EP as well. I don't know if I bought the EP after Funeral
or not.
Yeah,
you did.
Probably.
You did. It was re-released.
If
you bought it before, it's worth absolutely fucking loads because it was self.
Right.
And you probably had to buy it from one of their shows.
I'd have bought it after Funeral then.
But I sort of... when Neon Bible came out, I didn't like it very much.
I think I was more into Neon Bible than Funeral.
I don't have Neon Bible, actually. And the tracks that you put on the playlist, I rather liked. Although...
I put the version of No Cars Go from on there, which is
mind
great.
Mind you, having said that, I do prefer the version on the EP because I like that, the more ramshackle, the shambolic.
Really?
Really? We'd never have guessed that.
No.
Get your Tracy Bingo cards out.
We haven't put ramshackle on there before.
I think we should do.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Definitely. So, No, I can dig what you're saying.
No, I like the less slick, the more stripped down approach that you've got on.
I like it. It's more powerful on the album, which is I like it on the album because it's so big sounding.
I don't know, but the thing about it is, even though the sound got bigger and it's more dramatic.
That was wrong. I actually prefer Funeral to Neon Bottle.
Okay.
I'm neither here nor there on Neon Bottle.
Just looked at the track list.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I don't remember any of these.
I think they've lost some of their theatre.
You've not seen them live recently?
Well,
seen...
no. I've
no,
not,
they have absolutely
I haven't seen
not...
them live at all.
Okay. They have absolutely not... They've absolutely not lost any theatre at all. I've seen them four times. I didn't see them for the Suburbs.
No, I saw them on the Reflector tour and I was not particularly invested in it, to be honest.
I saw them at Leeds Fest 2005 for Funeral.
Yeah.
I then saw them at where they were third from top on the NME stage, so the second stage. I then saw them 2 years later at Reading, where they were second from headliner for Neon Bible.
Yeah.
I didn't like Neon Bible very much, so I didn't actually buy the Suburbs when it came out.
But The Suburbs is a magnificent album.
I know, I really missed out on it.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't like
Suburbs
as much.
That's my favourite.
Other than the opening track, I don't know. I find Suburbs...
Did you?
I think it's a bit U2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
Especially...
There's a lot of Springsteen influence in there as well.
Huge Springsteen.
But that's good, I like you too.
Well,
Springsteen.
I mean, I was going to say, Cole, you probably think that's a compliment, but it's not. City With No Children is really you too.
But did you see the video? I think it was We Used to Wait that had an online-only video.
I was going to get into that. I didn't see it. You mentioned it recently.
It was so fucking cool.
So, basically, it's a website.
It was when HTML5 first came out.
There was
a lot more functionality.
Yeah, it was to demonstrate Chrome.
Yeah.
It was to demonstrate the capabilities of the Chrome web browser, because basically what you do is you type
your postcode.
It's supposed to be your postcode of your childhood address.
Yeah.
And then loads of different... You have to do it on a PC. It doesn't work on a phone at all, obviously.
Yeah.
But it opens up loads of different little windows, so there's like birds flying around, and then suddenly you'll see the street view from Google of your childhood home.
Yeah, and like it was zoom in from the map and stuff. It was fucking amazing. I showed that to so many people. Like, look at this. The song's cool, but the video is just magical. Because
it's worth doing. If I can't remember the website address, but if you Google Arcade Fire,
We used to wait.
If you just Google Arcade Fire interactive video, you'll find it. Because that's how I found it. But they do quite a lot of really interesting things like that. But anyway, going back to the live thing, I then saw them. The next time I saw them was Glastonbury 2014. Where they were headlining the Pyramid Stage for the Reflector tour, and that was great. It was really, each time I've seen them has been really good.
Has it mostly been festivals though? Was that time we saw
every
them?
Every other time I've seen them has been festivals until me and Ian saw them on the Everything Now tour a couple of months back.
See, because I saw them on the Reflector tour and they'd got like a central stage and a normal main stage, but they didn't play on the central stage.
Okay.
A pretend version of them played.
Ah, the Reflectors.
With bobbleheads.
Yes.
Right.
But, like, it was cool. It was interesting, but I wasn't really in... I've never really got into Reflector as an album, so I wasn't that invested in the gig. Yeah. I was mostly excited by the fact that I saw some dude standing next to me who looked a lot like William Gibson. but it wasn't him.
Right.
I tweeted him.
No,
where was that?
That was Earl's Court.
Okay. So the...
The best thing about that, though, for the American leg of the tour, one of the people with the bobbleheads was Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad.
Okay. Excellent.
Because he was doing nothing. Yeah. And they were like, do you want to come out and tour with us? And he's like, sick, yeah, man.
Yeah.
So he was in the crowd with this big bobblehead on, and obviously he's the most famous person in the room at that point.
Flaming Lips, when they did, I think it was Do You Realise on Top of the Pops.
Is it Aaron Paul? Is that his name?
Yeah, cool. They got a dolphin on stage with them because they had all the animal costumes at that point.
Yeah.
And at the end of the set, the dolphin took its head off and it was Justin Timberlake.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Who is a massive Flaming Lips fan, apparently.
Well, he's done some really, really interesting albums here.
Yeah. But yeah, we went to see...
Did I just accidentally out myself as a Justin Timberlake fan?
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Justified, he's fucking brilliant.
The one after that,
it's
like most of the tracks are about 7 minute long funk jams of... Like,
is that Future Sex Love Sounds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really fucking
Justin
good.
Justin Timberlake, he's done some fucking great stuff.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should add him to the list.
We should.
And he can dance.
I believe he can. So we saw Arcade Fire at the NEC, and at that point we were planning the new series.
Yeah.
And we'd got Aerosmith down as the big band that we were going to do.
Yeah, and then it's like within 10 seconds, Colin turned to me and went, should we just change the headlining band? Because this is sick. And I was like, he didn't say this is sick because Colin doesn't say
that. Yeah.
But, you know, that was basically the...
It was, this is fucking amazing. We definitely
need... I
forget how much I love the band in between seeing them and...
I haven't seen them live at all, and you sent me a link to...
The webcast.
Yeah. Now, you know I'm a bit lax with doing my homework anyway.
Yeah.
But generally, you can send me extra albums, you can send me YouTube links to interviews, but if you send me a link to a live stream at 8 p.m, on a weeknight...
On the day when it's happening.
Yeah. I'm not going to watch it.
It wasn't on a weeknight, was it?
I think it was.
No, it was a Saturday night.
Was it a Saturday night?
Was it?
It was definitely a Saturday night.
Well, sorry, I didn't.
But
watch
anyway,
it
was really, 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 really good.
Yeah, like they did. They played in the round. It was done up like a boxing ring.
Oh wow!
So the whole intro was them running through the crowd in like silk dressing gown things and stuff like that, as if they were boxers entering the ring. It was really fucking cool.
But even before they came on, there were screens at the top that were... So the concept of the latest album is sort of like consumerism and that kind of thing. So they're all you know when you used to get adverts on...
Yeah, it's like infomercials.
Like infomercials and adverts on TV for like a album that's got loads of... Like, you know, they have like the compilation albums. Like, this is not available in shops.
Yeah, yeah.
Phone this number now to get it. And it was just stuff like that on the screen. So they pissed off a lot of people with the new album.
Yeah.
The marketing campaign...
I've read some of the reviews.
Oh, God, people fucking hate it. I love it.
Do you?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's a good album. I like it.
It is so good.
I'm not sure.
But basically what had happened is, for the marketing campaign, they'd gone ridiculously sort of postmodern, and they released promotional items such as like cereal boxes, and the album was available on a USB fidget spinner.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Because they were just trying to go with what's the most fashionable thing in the world now, so it will be out of date in a week's time when the album's released.
Yeah.
They put up fake websites with like reviews completely trashing the album, and then got into a big argument with, I think it was Pitchfork or one of these online things. And I did a load of like I always Google reviews and look at podcasts about the band, and I found more podcasts and stuff completely slagging off the new album than anything positive.
Wow.
Well, I mean,
including there was one from the New York Times podcast, which had got a guy who sounded like he was in his 50s talking. He was basically saying bollocks like on fleek and all this fucking youth slang.
God.
That we're too old to use, so he was definitely fucking too old to use. And just sounding like a complete cunt.
The intro to the title song of that album, though, sounds like ABBA.
Yeah.
It's Dancing Queen.
It's their ABBA album. It's fucking brilliant.
So,
I'm going to get into ABBA.
It is the A episode, anyway.
I'm going to get into ABBA. I like Stephen Wilson's new stuff. I like Arcade Fire's new stuff. I think the time is right for me to get into ABBA. It's going to happen. I'm going to get...
We did promise on Twitter we were doing ABBA this episode, so...
Yeah, fuck Arcade Fire, let's... Right, winner takes it all. No, we'll carry on with Arcade Fire.
I don't know, I thought everything now is just a bit contrived for the festival crowd. You know, the sing-along sections.
And all of their songs
I know they
like
all
that.
Do.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
that's what they do, it's not
they're
contrived. Just,
they're like a pop band.
Well, a review I read, actually, summing it up, said, many call it awful, atrocious or unlistenable, which is clearly not the case. At worst, it's not a particularly exciting synth pop record full of half-baked anthems. At best, it's a spry electric disco that accomplishes its job at being catchy and fun.
I think it's deeper than that, but
yeah,
I do genuinely think it's a really.
But, I mean,
good
I just
album.
I think for me, it's been a slow decline since Funeral. the sort of stripped down, and they've become more and more
Tracy Bingo stripped down.
Yeah. They've become more stadium, bigger. With
they were stadium from the first EP.
Yeah, they wanted to. This is what they wanted to sound.
I mean, by Reflector, I think they'd become Scissor Sisters.
You know, I wasn't really invested in Reflector, so I kind of get.
See, I'm a massive fan of James Murphy LCD Sound System, so he produced a lot of that record, most of it.
But having said that, I love their instrumentation.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a list of instruments that they have used. So
this is going to be, you know, the Warren Zevon episode where I listed everyone he'd ever worked with. This is probably going to be longer.
Maybe not, but so I mean, they've got obviously guitars, drums, piano, violin, viola, cello, double bass, xylophone, glockenspiel, keyboard, synths, French horn, accordion, harp, mandolin, and hurdy-gurdy.
Yep.
Now, I looked up a hurdy-gurdy.
Did you not know what a hurdy-gurdy was?
No, I didn't. Other than a song by Donovan.
Yeah.
No.
I also looked up what a hurdy-gurdy was the other day.
Oh, I really want one. They're amazing.
Yeah, no, I want to use mine in Paleolithic extreme metal.
Excellent.
Yes.
Because I think it would work.
There needs to be more Paleolithic extreme metal.
There's only one at the moment.
Excellent.
And I'm in it.
That's fantastic.
But no, I mean, a hurdy-gurdy.
Do you have like a dinosaur on bass?
No. This is post-dinosaurs. This is like...
Oh, Paleolithic.
Is that a new genre name? Post-dinosaur?
Yeah. That's what I'm going to refer to the band as now.
Wasn't that Jay Maskus and the Fog, but then he reformed Dinosaur Jr.?
He did.
So he was also pre-dinosaur?
Yeah. Pre and post. I've got a note on here that Regine Chassagne is the only person ever to look cool playing an accordion.
What?
Well, you fucking don't. You look like you playing an accordion.
I look miserable playing accordion. I just look at the floor too much. I know.
It's like shoegaze accordion, but there's no pedals for you to be looking at.
I wrote that note ages ago, and I've been waiting to say it ever since.
Okay, well, to annoy you then, I've got to say, Regine's vocals, especially on the last album, on the Sprawl 2, Mountains Beyond Mountains track.
Oh, don't even come near Sprawl 2.
You're going to have a fight here.
Her vocals really great.
Yes,
she sounds,
her vocals are really great, I agree.
No, they're great.
I'm going to find a bit where you say like insert it in. Her vocals are really great.
She sounds like Alison Goldfrapp on that.
I like Goldfrapp as well.
I don't like Alison Goldfrapp's voice either.
I have found, though, that similar to Yolandi from The Antword, her vocals become higher as her career progresses.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty high to start with on Haiti on the... on Funeral.
There was a track actually on the last album that does save it for me, We Don't Deserve Love.
Oh, that's a beautiful song.
Because it's got this most beautiful detuned keyboard line and is that slide guitar in the back? Is that a pedal steel?
Is
that keyboard?
Steels.
I'm not sure, but
there's both. I think it's mixing
beautiful.
The two together.
Yeah,
when they played that live, that was one of the sort of set pieces of the show where there was sort of a little bit of theatrical bit. So Wim Butler was actually out in the audience, in the crowd, singing the first half of the song with the screen at the side of the stage. He got the lyrics like it was a karaoke song.
Yeah.
So he sang the first bit and then he walked to the stage for the end bit of the song. But as it's all about like driving home to you, so he was travelling to the stage where his wife is. I really like her vocals. Even when she's doing the ridiculously high-pitched stuff like Electric Blue on the latest album.
Yeah. I can see how it would grate.
It's going to be an acquired taste. Not everybody's going to like it.
Because it's quite nasal.
Yeah, and when we saw the most recent gig, I realised something when she was singing Sprawl 2, Mountains Beyond Mountains, and she'd got her headset microphone on.
Yeah.
And she'd got this big, like, sequiny... jacket type thing on.
Yes.
And she was dancing around the stage and it was like, I'm absolutely sure that when she was a kid she was watching people like Madonna and Kylie Minogue and people like that, and she was like, I'm going to do that one day, and now she is.
Yeah.
And she looks like she's having the most fun in the universe.
Yeah, that's the thing, live they all look like they're having so much fucking fun. It's addictive. Like you see them doing it and you're like, god damn, you are loving this.
Yeah, and so am I when I'm watching it. I mean, every time I've seen them has been good, but the most recent tour, they are at the fucking top of their game.
The thing, it occurred to me earlier as well, right, and this is I think it's a genuinely good thing, is that they're not, in general, attractive enough to be as famous as they are nowadays, in today's yeah. music scene. Because they're writing pop songs, it's super catchy, but none of them look like yeah. Ariana Grande. And that's how you yeah. become successful nowadays. And it fucking... it makes me happy that...
Yeah. Yeah, they've like, got yeah. their own...
on their, yeah, on their like musical that. Terms. It's
and
not
on
like,
their own terms yeah. as well.
They're not definitely. Selling themselves out or anything. They're just
not
they're just
all.
Doing it.
They're doing what they want. And Wynn Butler said that at part of the gig. He said, thanks for sticking with us and allowing us to change what we do and do what we want to do. Which is why I think of them as being the new Talking Heads.
Yeah.
Because, you know, while there's been elements of dance-type stuff, even on Funeral, Power Out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got the really stomping oh. drum.
I love Power Out.
It's got the stomping kick drum all the way through it. There's four beats on the floor the whole way through. And I used to play it when DJing loads. But yeah.
I love the glockenspiel that goes all the way through that.
But they've built it up even more and more on each album. And then obviously working with... So it started on The Suburbs with stuff like Sprawl 2, where yeah, that's yeah. a massive synth-pop song. But then the next album, they worked with James Murphy to... basically do a fucking dance pop record. Reflector is fucking amazing. I love the title track. Reflector is so yeah. good.
No, see, when they played that live, I was like, oh no, this, I get it now.
Yeah,
like the but first time I heard it, I'm like, yeah.
And the other tracks on that album, I mean, I really like Dub.
Yeah.
And there is a massive dub and reggae influence on that record.
Yeah.
Particularly on things like Here Comes the Nighttime. But you've got the... Here Comes the Nighttime, you've got the really fast sped-up intro bit that then slows down. And yeah. the really fast sped-up intro bit
Yeah, kind of like Babylon Zoo's Spaceman.
Not quite, because that is... it's sounding like a Haitian carnival.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what they're trying to sound like.
That song because made me think Sonic the Hedgehog, though.
Where's
is it because of
that
simple melodic? Yeah,
and it made me think of Malcolm Middleton's last solo album when he went all electronic.
But, you know
and
what?
Just moronic keyboard.
I would quite happily listen to a soundtrack album of particularly Sonic 2. The Green Hill Zone music is fucking brilliant.
yeah.
Oh, I'm going to play Sonic 2 when I get home tonight. That's going to happen. Raspberry Pi's coming out. I'm playing. Yeah.
Colin did come to me with a concept once of doing a video game themed band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the guy we wanted on bass moved to Japan.
Yes.
Fuck you, Sean Bradley.
Damn you, Sean Bradley. We must send him a link to the podcast.
Ruined everything.
Is it literally, he announced he was moving to Japan the week that I had the idea of asking
yeah,
him to.
Because you were like, yeah, man, let's get Sean on bass. And I'm like, that sounds great. It's going to work perfectly.
I'm moving to Japan.
It's not going to work. I don't want
to
play bass.
To hang out with Japanese wrestlers mostly, by the looks of his
Yeah, which is fine.
Which is cool.
Know.
Yeah.
That's what you want to
Lovely
do.
Lovely bloke. We like Sean.
Yeah, we do.
We do. Brad Cat. But yeah, Haiti, there is so much of a connection between Arcade Fire. Regine's parents were from Haiti.
Ah.
And they escaped to Canada when Haiti had a really, really bad dictator.
Yeah.
And they sort of escaped there. So Haiti being a really sort of poor country, and they've had things like there was the earthquake there.
Yeah.
And there's been like the outbreak of cholera following that. Arcade Fire raised loads of money. Every ticket that they sell for every gig they have done since 2005.
Yeah.
So since a year after their debut album came out. If they're playing in the UK, £1 goes towards it. If they're playing in Europe, it's a euro. If they're playing in America, it's a dollar. From every single ticket sale goes to Haiti. They actually physically go there and help with... After the earthquake, they actually went out there themselves.
That's pretty cool.
To try and help rebuild. They are the anti-Wyclef Jean, who set up a foundation and then embezzled all the fucking money.
God damn you, Wyclef.
But yeah, they like when I saw them at Glastonbury. Obviously, yeah. Glastonbury has loads of like money from the ticket sales goes to charity anyway.
Yeah.
But because it wasn't their show, they couldn't necessarily do that. So they had t-shirts where all of the money that they got from the t-shirts was going to Haiti.
That's really awesome.
I bought one. It's It's got Arcade Fire, a tree, and it says 80 on it.
Oh.
It's really, really cool. So they've got their heart in the right place as well. So
yeah,
they're doing music that I really dig, but they've got the ethical side. I really, really dig
them. I was going to say it's hard not to like them, but Tracy's managing.
Yeah.
So. Well, she likes some bits. I do like them. I do like them. I just don't like the more stadium sound.
Yeah, but they've always had a stadium sound.
I'm fickle like that, you know.
We've noticed.
Yeah.
I did find a review, actually, that sums up what you were saying about them looking like they're really enjoying it all the time. And it said, the joy is true joy, the sadness is true sadness, and while Wynn Butler is certainly a fantastic frontman who's able to channel it all, the real power comes from all of the band members who endlessly and passionately participate in the music with just the same fervour. And it says, they're a magical posse.
It's fucking beautiful to watch.
They've got the Preservation Hall Jazz Band supporting them, which is a New Orleans jazz band.
Yeah.
And they all sort of came out for the encore and did some songs with them. And
yeah, it was amazing because they walked back out through the crowd.
Like a carnival.
Loads of people were playing acoustic instruments, so they were just playing the acoustic instruments out through the crowd. And so you could hear it.
It was Wake Up, so everyone in the crowd was singing the... Na, na,
yeah.
Na, na, na.
It was just... majestic. It was so good. It was the best way to end a gig.
I've been to some good gigs already this year. I've got some other gigs coming up.
Yeah.
By the time this podcast comes out, no. In a couple of weeks' time after this podcast comes out, I'm going to see The Cure. So that may well be the best gig of the year because I fucking love The Cure.
We'll probably be at Hellfest when this comes out, maybe.
Yeah.
That's in a couple of weeks, so.
It's going to have to do a lot to top that as being gig of the year for me.
Yeah.
One of my favourite bits, though, there's a line in Ready to Start where it's businessmen drink my blood.
Yeah.
And where we were sitting, there was one of the directors from the NEC group sitting next to us, very enthusiastically singing businessmen drink my blood.
Yeah, yeah.
You are one. Nice bloke.
Yeah, lovely. Very,
very nice bloke. But
flamboyant and super excited.
Yeah.
And apparently really drunk. I didn't know that. So...
But yeah, Arcade Fire, fucking brilliant.
Yep.
2.5 of us love them.
If only Tracy was able to fall in love with bands that could play their instruments.
And wanted large numbers of people to have fun at the same time. Yes. That's the issue. It's the Queen effect, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Kiss effect.
Well, no, it's Tracy was going on about Radio Gaga and stuff like that.
No, who was it you were saying that? What was the accusation thrown at me that I didn't like?
Oh, you hate fun. That was the Van Halen episode.
Yeah. You know what, right? This is an addendum to the Queen episode that I didn't mention at the time, right? But, like, Radio Gaga is about how they're sad that radio isn't as popular anymore. And what did they do? Did a really fucking over-the-top video.
Yeah. Which helped to establish MTV. Yeah.
Like, well done. Absolutely. Well done, Queen. Write a song about how you're sad about radio and then fist radio.
Video killed the radio star.
Yep.
It's like, I'm going to write a song about saving the seagulls and it's going to be released as a limited edition on a dead seagull.
Yes. And I will play a violin with a seagull as a bow.
Oh, you know what? If Liz listens to this podcast,
seagull
wing. Try and do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we're probably about
done. I'm sorry, seagulls.
Not Steven Seagull, though.
No.
Ty Seagull.
Is he?
Just get the impression he's a prick. He might not be. It's just my perception of things. He might be lovely.
I've only heard a couple of his tracks.
Steven Seagal.
Yeah. Oh, Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
I'm not Steven Seagal's then.
No, no.
Oh God, no! Seagal's fucking mental.
Exactly.
That's fair. Pronunciation again.
Yeah, Steven Seagal. That's his name. He might try and it's like bouquet, isn't it?
He would kill you.
Yeah.
Also, there's no U in his name, so it's Gal.
Yeah.
Definitely Seagal.
It's just pretentious.
So is Ty Seagal.
I bet he's changed that. I bet he's changed that by default just so people stop calling him Steven Seagal.
I suspect not. I suspect he stops people calling him Steven Seagal by punching them in the throat.
With his mullet.
Yes.
Talking about mullets.
Next week.
What?
Next fortnight.
The Beastie Boys. who invented that term.
Did they?
Did yes. they?
But we'll get more onto that then. Next episode, not next week, we're going to be talking about Bon Iver and the Beastie Boys.
I still can't get behind calling them Bon Iver. Stupid.
It's the one thing I pronounce correctly.
Yeah.
So, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye. Нет, побочка.